This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome to 90 Cats and Counting, another wonderful episode. I am certified cat behaviorist Rita Reimers, ritareimers.com. And today I have another wonderful cat behaviorist here, catbehaviorhelp.com, Steven. I don't know if I'm going to say your last name right, so we'll say it when we come back from this commercial. We'll be right back.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
And we're back with 19 Cats and Counting. Steven, say your last name for me.
It's pronounced Quant, and it is okay. a pleasure to be here, Rita.
I'm just so excited. I looked at your website, and I love everything you do. Just tell us, how did you get started?
Yeah, so I'll take you back in time to 2011 and the Joplin tornado in Joplin, Missouri. That is a good sort of benchmark for how I started, even though I've been working for years as a volunteer. And at the time, I was a volunteer for ASPCA.
Nice.
In New York. And they contacted me on Memorial Day of that year and said, hey, can you get on a plane tomorrow and fly to Joplin, Missouri, where there's been this terrible tornado that killed hundreds of people and left over 1,200 dogs and cats without a home? And I said yes, and I went, and I was assigned to the cat building. We had aluminum warehouses in a field, basically. And there were about 100 cats. And I joke that, like, in the military, there's something called battlefield commissions. You know, when soldiers get knocked down, someone's got to be promoted, right? And basically, within less than a week, I was the assistant to the lead in that shelter. And then they asked me if I could stay an extra week and take over because someone else was not going to show up. And I said, sure. And by then, we had 425 cats. And I learned, you know, and yes, it was really complicated to, you know, provide care, daily care.
Did you try to match them back up with their parents too, right?
We did that too. We had a lot of reunifications. We had people coming in every day looking for their cats. We were trapping cats at night, and there was going to eventually be a big adoption event. But it was at that case, my first case with them, that I learned what it meant to relieve suffering in another creature. And as I'm sure you know, when you relieve suffering in a person or an animal, it changes you. And it certainly changed me. And I didn't know it at the time, but that was the beginning of a transition of several years of length to transition out of theatrical design, of all things. I joke, I went from one high-paying profession to another. I got a contract with them immediately afterwards, where I became a freelance responder with the field investigation and response team, which it was known at the time. It's now called something else. And I went for 2011 through 2018, going around the country on mostly large scale criminal cases, a lot of dog fighting, cockfighting, hoarding cases.
God bless you.
And then some and disasters as well. And I worked in the medical division for the most part, and that was how I got started. And then eventually, I don't know if you want me to keep going with that or I can just put that on pause.
It just takes a hold of you, doesn't it?
Totally.
I know. When I first started volunteering, it was the same with me. And I did it because I had a sick cat who passed away. So there's usually something that propels us into this business. And once we get into it, it's like an addiction. We want to save as many as we can.
There is this concept, and we actually are 40. I also work for the New York City Animal Shelter. It's called the Animal Care Centers of New York City. And we are afforded a trauma therapist once a month, typically. And we have started connecting ideas about people who work in helping professions with trauma. And I've certainly had my experiences with that that go back many years. And it's just, it's interesting that a lot of us end up in helping professions because partly in response to what we've been through in our own lives, we want to help and find homes and solutions and compassionate solutions for animals who have no voice of their own other than to look at us and say, please, I need help.
Well, there's such a thing as compassion fatigue, too. I know that there's been a few suicides in this line of work.
Yeah, well, for sure. And we also now typically, at least the people I know, refer to compassion fatigue as vicarious trauma. It's not that we're tired of being compassionate. Yes, there is burnout, for sure. But we are experiencing trauma that we're bearing witness to. And
yes,
that is very, very difficult.
And it never stops, too. I mean, you get so many cats adopted, and then there's like twice as many coming in. So it's like a never ending. We hope it ends one day. That's what spay neuter is all about, but that's a whole other topic. But another thing that's near and dear to my heart, TNR.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, this is awesome. I love that you have all kinds of experience with cats and adoptions and wellness. What got you into the behavior niche?
So, great question, Rita. I love that. Yeah, so I came back from an ASPCA case. This is more or less, basically mostly happened like this. And it was, I had been in Iowa in the dead of winter. You know those little hand warmers you can?
Yeah.
Or I had 18 of them distributed around my body.
Oh, wow.
And I came home and I said, Steven, you're getting too old for this. You got to look for work closer to
home. Another feeling.
Right? And I saw an ad. I went online. I saw an ad for a feline behavior specialist at the city shelter. And I sent in a resume. And it happens that I worked for a time with a dog rescue group in New York City as well. And a colleague and friend of mine there also happened to be a friend of my future boss.
Wow.
Which didn't hurt. And anyway, I got an interview. I got the job. And then during COVID, I was laid off and I built out my own business and then came back to ACC part-time, where I've been ever since.
During COVID. Yep. I know that story.
Yep. Crazy.
Well, that's wonderful. The behavior side is another component to helping control the populations in the shelters and rescues. So if you can keep a cat in their home and teach their human, you know, how to get over these behavior issues, make them understand cat behavior a little better, that's another cat that won't end up being surrendered.
Yeah. And, you know, we say that, you know, we can never adopt our way out of the problem.
Yeah.
That you can't just work on it on that end of it.
You've got to
also work on the intake. And so surrender prevention and TNR are both the backbone of controlling the intake.
Yeah, I took a surrender prevention class, and I'm going to take a TNR because I want to understand everything that goes into that. I'm too old to go out and crawl under houses, but I can certainly support the mission. I'm 65 this year. I'm not crawling under any houses. Okay.
Yeah, neither am I. We're the same age. I'm not crawling under. I've done my due duty.
Yes.
You know, working seven days a week in really tough environments. So yeah.
Me too. We have a little bit before we go to a break. Tell me about your cats. I was interested to read. You have a cat that's blind, right?
Blind from birth.
I've had a deaf cat. I've never had a blind cat.
Well, we've had a deaf cat too. It was blind and deaf in the same household. It was really pretty funny. But we were looking for a companion for our older cat after he lost his brother. And I was at ASPCA in New York City. And we were looking for an older cat for our older cat, right?
Right.
The sensible thing to do.
Yeah, you sure don't want to have a kitten with an older cat.
Right. Well, guess what? A staff member said, Steven, did you see the blind kitten in room G? And I went in and there she is meowing, meowing, meowing. And I took a picture. I call it the money shot picture, you know, of send it to my husband, Tom. He came over and that was it. So we took her in. They thankfully, you know, we did a careful introduction. They became fast friends. I don't know, by the way, I'm just going to quick segue. I don't know what the most common behavior case that you get is, but mine are cat to cat introductions and cat.
Integrations and peeing are my top two
as well. So there we go. Okay. So anyway, we got Jenny. She's ruled the house ever since. Simon, her buddy, passed away over 12 years ago. And then we found Cricket, who is her stepsister, and they're good buddies. But Jenny's very smart. She has spatial memory and she performs spatial mapping. I took her to a house on vacation. We would go up to a small island off the coast of Maine in the summers. And there was a house we hadn't been to in 6 years. And we took her back into that house and she was immediately navigating her way through it. Left, right, left, knew exactly where the ladder was to go up to the loft bed that she liked to do.
Oh my gosh.
So she's got a different way of seeing the world. It's like sight without vision. And I see her dreaming in her sleep. And it's like, oh my God,
what do you dream? Like you can't see anything, right? You can't picture it.
But it's the touchy-feely world, you know?
Well, plus they've got all those whiskers on their legs and things. That's how they feel prey.
Right.
And I think they use that to navigate around also.
Absolutely.
Plus, is it a good idea for if you've got a blind cat to just not move the furniture around a lot so that they can get their bearings?
So initially, when you bring a blind cat into your home, absolutely. But I like to joke about it's almost like a punchline. Don't move the furniture. I actually wrote a behavior guide for blind cats that's on my shelter's website, which is nycacc.org.
And we'll put all that good stuff in the write-up.
I make the point of not being overly protective. Your blind cat needs to be able to experience the world in a safe way, right?
Uh-huh. Right.
But they need as much, if not more, enrichment than a sighted cat because they don't get the visual component. So we have to do things it's not like we intentionally move the furniture, but things move. I'm vacuuming, right? I got to pull the sofa out. And Jenny goes, whoa, oh, what's this? Oh, that's very interesting, she says. I'm curious, you know, when we moved into this apartment, we had boxes everywhere. She had the time of her life, just exploring, exploring, exploring. And in fact, I'll tell you one quick story. When she moved into our old apartment, when we let her out of the small bedroom where we kept her initially, she explored the apartment for 8 hours nonstop, just going around and around and around.
Getting her bearings.
Getting her bearings, memorizing it. And then finally she took a nap that was just like biblical.
Well, it's like running a marathon for her, right?
Totally.
I love that so much. When I had the deaf cat, what was good about him is that he couldn't hear the vacuum, so he wasn't afraid of it.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. I think sometimes the other cats kind of sense that another cat has a little issue because, of course, my cats are very welcoming. They've been through so many cats in and out from adoptions and then passing. But it seemed like Zakira was his name. It seemed like that they understood he had a limitation and they seemed to make more allowances for him.
Interesting. I know that Mabel, our deaf girl, we had a deaf cat for a year. I discovered I have lots of good boundaries, but not on vacation. And I was volunteering at a shelter in the Virgin Islands in the mornings. And by the end of it, there was a 10-year-old deaf cat who'd been in the shelter for 2 years.
Oh, my.
And we said, we're going to bring her home. And we flew her home. And she never really loved our other cats. And Jenny learned to navigate around where she knew Mabel tended to take naps.
Oh my gosh. Let's avoid Mabel.
Yeah, avoid Mabel. Stay away from that cat.
They're so stinking smart, Stephen. They really are. We have to take a quick break, but there's so much we need to talk about. We'll pick another topic and then I'd love to have you back on. We'll be right back after messages from our awesome sponsor.
Real people, real stories.
Our little dog developed this lymph problem, but the chemotherapy lasted for 6 months, started developing more lymph nodes. So I thought I'd just try carnivore. The lymph nodes started to go down. Then I took him into the vet to have him checked out, and there was no signs at all inside.
My cat had issues that developed in his eye, and 3 months later, my veterinarian said, let's go ahead and remove the eye. I heard the carnivore on advertising. So I said, you know what? I'm going to order this product. They did the procedure. They did all the tests, and they said, I don't know what you did. This product saved his eye.
I've got a Labrador. He could hardly lift herself up off the floor. The treatment was chemotherapy. That's when I said, this could be the ticket. About 3 weeks, you could tell. She was very alert. She was going on 5-mile walk. She is just like prime again.
Call 866-836-8735. That's 866-836-8735. Or visit carnivore.com.
That's CARNIVORA.com.
Use promo code PETLIFE at checkout for 15% off your order at carnivora.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
And me and Teddy Bear are back. She's a cutie, isn't she?
Absolutely.
Teddy Bear was outside. She was found outside as a kitten. I have a brother, and a friend of my mom's had adopted her. And they had another cat. Unfortunately, the lady passed away. And the husband said, I can't deal with two cats and a dog. So he gave her up because she was the newest one in the household. She's very shy, but she can be spicy when she wants to be. So she's fully indoctrinated. It took her about a year and a half, I'd say, to feel comfortable with the other cats. But, you know, it works out. We were talking beforehand about you're involved with education as well, which includes the book you showed me. Let's talk about that.
Can I hold it up?
Yes.
It is called Happy
Comes
Home.
I'm buying a copy.
You can get a signed copy if you buy it off the website.
Oh, yes, definitely.
And my husband illustrated it. He's an artist.
Oh, cool. It's all in the family. I love that.
Yeah, no, it's great fun. And it's fun to watch kids reading it. And an interesting thing, we decided that the child in the book, whose name is Avery, would not be gendered. We just didn't make a decision about gender.
That's a great idea, because then it's universal.
Right. And it turns out that children's books that where the main protagonist is a girl are read much less frequently than if it's a boy. So we decided to just not make that choice. And the clothing that Avery wears is kind of nonspecific in that sense. And we also decided that Happy, the cat, would not be gendered. And I always thought that kids would just make their own assumptions about gender. But what we found is that most kids don't seem to care. They don't actually gender either the cat or the child.
I think all that stuff comes from growing up and adults and all of that.
Right.
Yeah.
But we had a great time writing that book and illustrating it. And Tom would do an illustration and I'd be like, where's Mr. Top Cat's tail? Mr. Top Cat
right?
is the behaviorist who comes to help the family with the cat who is acting all crazy and doing all sorts of things. And I'm like, where's Mr. Top Cat's tail? And he's like, oh no, I forgot the tail. And he would sketch it in. And
I love this. The earlier we can teach kids about pets, all kinds of pets, but cats seem to really get picked on a lot. So the sooner we can get them to understand cats, I think we'll have less of that, you know, middle school prank stuff where boys do some nasty things out there that we don't want to talk about, right?
I would love to be able to teach what it feels like to relieve suffering in another creature to children. As you know, I didn't even have that experience until I was an older adult.
Me too.
And it was so powerful to feel that. Oh, it was life-changing. It literally changed the course of my life.
Every time I do it, when one of my cats needs to go, it's hard, but it's the best thing for them. You need to think about not what you want, but what's best for the cat or dog. Or whatever the pet is.
Very hard for some people to make that decision, that leap, make the shift from life-saving to letting go. I had a friend call me once. This is before there was any treatment for feline infectious peritonitis, FIP.
Yes, which thankfully there is now. It's no longer a death sentence.
There is now a good treatment. But at the time, there was not. And her cat developed it. And she called me. And she said she found a vet who had a special vitamin regimen that would save her cat's life. And of course, it was going to cost thousands of dollars. And of course, it was not a cure. It was,
help at all.
Well, we didn't even get to that point. It was basically an unethical vet who was selling a concoction.
There's a few of them out there, sadly.
Well, I've never met one. I love vets. Vets
Me
are
too.
Great people. And they have the highest suicide rate of any profession
they
in the United States. But she's talking to me about this, and I'm telling her, no, there is no treatment. If he knew the treatment, he would be selling this treatment worldwide. It would be, right?
Like it's being sold now.
Right. And I'm getting kind of increasingly forceful with her because I'm really worried her cat is going to die a painful death because it was not a good way to go. And she's crying. And I finally said to her, why did you call me if you're pushing back so hard on all of this? And she said, through the tears you could just hear in her voice, she said, I'm calling you because I want you to tell me to euthanize my cat. She needed someone to really help her with that decision.
I had a client call me for that too. And it's not something you can decide for someone else. All you can do, even my veterinarian, if I bring in a cat that's sick, he'll say, it's not a wrong idea to euthanize him now, but you don't have to. You know, we can make his life more comfortable for a while. But he always gives me the choice and tells me what we can and can't do. And that's what a veterinarian should do.
Yeah. And I, in fact, my dad, bless his heart, who's 95, had to put his dog down, had to euthanize his dog recently. And I was, I couldn't be there because I actually had surgery that day. My husband was there. There were two vets there and my dad there. And I just helped him make the decision on his own by reiterating what the vets had said about prognosis and quality of life and dignity. And then I just asked my dad the question after I knew that he had all the information. I said, Dad, what do you think we should do? Or what do you think you should do? And then he said, I think we're out of options.
And he was right.
And he was right.
When the pet is suffering, it's the kindest thing to let them go. And you have to be there. A lot of people are scared to be there, but it gives them comfort if you're there with them.
And, you know, the thing you never want to remember after you have lost your cat or dog is to have the memory of holding on to them for too long.
Yeah.
You want the memory of having made the right decision at the right
Absolutely.
Time.
Absolutely. And you know, when I was younger, there was a time I held on too long, but I know better now. You have to do what's best for the pet. And that's part of education, you know, getting the word out there. But you have a formal education program that you are part of. Is when we were talking, did I misunderstand that? Or?
So slightly. There, at the City Shelter Animal Care Centers, there is an education program that brings in middle schoolers and grade schoolers for educational, basically, presentation on animals, cats and dogs, and rabbits and guinea pigs. And I'm not a formal part of that process, but I do a lot of things at the organization, even though the thing that I'm paid to do is cat behavior. We have had children read my book to the cats. That's been a lot of fun. And there's social media posts with that, and that was a lot of fun. We have a very strong educational program at ACC.
That's so important. I think it really is. I don't remember getting any formal education about pets. You know, of course, I was a child back in the 60s. Now I've dated
Me
myself.
Either.
There was nothing. And back then, it was, you know, when you got a cat, the automatic thing you did, spay, declaw, which, you know, now we don't do that.
And it's actually, you know, it's illegal in New York State. And we have seen the effect of that. We don't, the only declawed cats we get at the shelter now are older. The ones who are kind of legacy. It was done years ago, but we never get young cats anymore who've been declawed.
I love that. It's really, I wrote an article about it on my blog. It's really, you're butchering your cat. It's like cutting off the top joint of your finger. And that leads to behavior issues too.
Yes, absolutely. Not to mention phantom pain and genuine pain and potential litter box avoidance and balance
yes.
problems. And you know, cats are perfect animals. We do not need to reinvent them. You know, we can help them be happy in this life and make sure that we do our best to prevent overpopulation. But they're absolutely perfect. And we should respect that.
I agree with that. I love my cats how they are. That's another thing. We could talk about this forever too. When I used to volunteer with Save a Life Rescue, you know, I had some lady adopt a cat and then the next week she returned it because the cat wasn't a cuddle cat. Well, for one week's not long enough for a cat to get settled in your home. And for two,
for sure.
Not every cat is going to be a lab cat. You know, you have to accept the cat and his or her terms, right?
Yeah. And I joke with people, but I'm being serious. You know, you can't raise a cat or a kitten to be something that it's not. And we had our first two cats were brothers. They were biologically connected. They were kittens and they were raised by the same people in the same home. And one became a very affectionate lap cat. And one who we loved was a more independent non-lap cat. And eventually, after years of giving Felix a little bit of yogurt off the tip of my finger in the kitchen, he became what I called a kitchen lap cat. but, you know, very, very narrow.
He had an agenda there, Stephen. I want the yogurt, therefore I will put up with this. Once
exactly.
the yogurt's gone, I'm out of here, right?
I'm out of here, totally.
That's okay, especially since we want to be able to, you know, get our cats and get them into the carrier in case there's ever an emergency. So the fact that there was a place you could touch him, that's a good thing.
And we could touch him in many ways, but he didn't want to sit on your lap, and that's just the way he was. I did do once carrier training with a client whose cat had a terrible aversion to carriers, and I do a very gentle process. But one of the things that we did was all his favorite toys were kept around the carrier.
Yeah, that's great.
And he was not a hugely affectionate cat, but guess what? He became more affectionate near the carrier.
Wow, because that's where his favorite things were.
That's where his favorite things were. And he got all these treats and all this love. So, so it's not just about what we do, it can be where we do it.
Yeah,
I have a place for Cricket where she gets catnip. It's down the hall to the left. And down the hall to the right is what I call the play area. And what's fascinating is that when she wants catnip, guess what she does? She goes
She'll
down
lead
the hall.
You there, right?
Yeah, she goes down the hall to the left and then she lays down and I'm expected to provide catnip. But I've given her a communication tool mm-hmm. that is location-based.
Plus they're great manipulators, cats.
Yes.
They really are. My cats are really good about not begging for food, except for Boo Boo. He's 17. As he's getting older, that seems to appeal to him more. He'll just sit and stare at me. And I know what he wants.
Totally. That's hysterical.
Oh my gosh, we're running out of time, but I definitely want to have you back. Do you have any last words of wisdom you'd like to leave us with?
Oh my.
I know I put you on the spot here.
No, it's okay. So I'll give you a couple. If you're going to go adopt a cat, look for personality, temperament, energy level. Try to avoid making decisions based on gender or appearance. Your connection to your cat is going to be very deep and is going to ultimately be extra satisfying if you make that connection and you don't just go on stereotypes like male cats are friendlier. Well, tell that to my super friendly girl cats, right?
I know, right? I noticed you have two girl cats, which can be the hardest to integrate, but you didn't have any trouble, did you?
I've had every combination and they've all basically been great and they're happy with each other. But yeah, you know, you can make predictions about groups, but you can't use that stereotype to point at an individual and say,
I have 9 girls here and they get along and some cuddle together. So yeah, you can't generalize because the cat will prove you wrong every time.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely true.
Well, I definitely want you back, Stephen. If you want to read more about Stephen, read his blog, you know, book an appointment, catbehaviorhelp.com. It couldn't be easier to remember, right?
Yeah, it's pretty basic. It's just cat behavior help.
I've enjoyed having you on. I hope you come back again. I know that there's a lot more you can talk about because we talked about it before we did the podcast.
Yeah, I'd love to be back. And I thank you so much for having me. I'm so glad we were able to connect.
Oh, me too. It's my pleasure. And of course, I have to thank Mark Winter for giving me this spot on Pet Life Radio. I am forever grateful. And don't forget, every day is Catter Day. And we'll talk to you next time.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.